episode 62 of Write Your Best Book, the top 10 rated podcast created for authors by authors. Every week, I sit down with an accomplished best-selling author, and we discuss one of the many issues and struggles that all writers face at some point on their writing journey. We talk about things from mindset issues, motivation, inspiration, imposter syndrome, etc., to specific craft issues like character development and settings and plotting and everything in between. This week, I am so thrilled to bring you one of my all-time favorite authors, Julia Heberlin. I first discovered Julia's thrilling novels a few years ago when I picked up a copy of Black Eyed Susans. The cover was just beautiful, and the blurb really sealed the deal. See, that just goes to show how important those two things are. I devoured her book in 3 days, and it's been on my top 5 favorite books of all time list ever since. So, when she ever so graciously agreed to sit down for a discussion to help aspiring authors, I about fell over in my chair. I didn't almost do a happy dance. I actually did the damn thing. This week, Julia and I will be talking about writing realistic crime fiction, but do not let that fool you into thinking this episode is only for crime fiction writers. Not by a long shot. While yes, Julia and I are both crime fiction writers, though she is obviously much more accomplished than I am, you really need to hear how she approaches researching her novels, as we can all learn, including myself, from her awesome approach and her nearly unbelievable stories. But trust me, the things Julia has done in the name of writing some of the most realistic fiction I've ever read will inspire every one of you to think outside the box when it comes to researching your novels. And every story, unbelievable as it may sound, is 100% true. First, let's talk briefly about the why behind Julia's process. And in fact, any method of research authors may employ prior to writing their fiction, whether it's crime or, believe it or not, even fantasy. I think everyone would agree that the reason that reading always has and always will be one of the most popular forms of art and entertainment is because it allows the reader to escape from reality, if only briefly. Through an author's carefully penned words, we can be transported literally to any place, any period, any time we want. Wish you could travel to 1940s London and witness how women literally kept the economy going while the boys were at war, like I always wish. Easy. Find a book like The Alice Network by Kate Quinn. Want to travel to a whole nother realm where you can ride dragons, wear next to nothing all day, and marry Khal Drogo? Well, just pick up Game of Thrones by George R.R. Martin. We all know that reading is so popular because it is the purest form of escapism. But what you may have never thought about before is that in order to make these alternative realities realistic and somewhere we could actually escape to, at least in our minds, we authors have the humongous responsibility of creating and describing these worlds vividly and in such a way that whoever reads our words can not only imagine themselves there, they can actually feel transported to the world we've created. And the absolute best way any author can accomplish this before they even put pen to paper is to first research the heck out of certain elements of their story. Even if you're writing the most fantastical of fantasy stories, doing some research on things like mythology, the history of certain creatures and myths and lore, etc., can help you create a world and everything in it that will feel so real to the reader. So on that note, let's dive right into my conversation with Julia Heberlin and learn all the amazing ways she has researched her novels. Okay, welcome back to Write Your Best Book, the top 10 rated podcast created for authors by authors. And as I promised, we have author Julia Heberlin on the show today. And we're going to talk about writing realistic crime fiction. So let's start first by welcoming Julia to the show. Julia, hi, thank you for coming.
Hi, it's great to be here. It's so great to have you. I'm a huge fan. So this is super, super fun for me. All right, let's start with you telling my listeners a bit more about you, your books, and your journey from maybe when you first started writing to where you are today.
All right. I've written 5 psychological thrillers, all of them set in Texas, where I grew up. I grew up in the small town of Decatur with a very spooky mansion leering on a hill over the top. I began to want to write a novel when I was probably about 15 or 16, when I read Rebecca on the window seat that my father built for me. When there were books all around in shelves. It was a beautiful little space. So I walked to the library a lot as well, and, you know, read a lot of, honestly, romance novels, which I credit with my good vocabulary. I feel I have a better vocabulary than many an Ivy League graduate, which I am not. And I'm grateful to those writers. But then, you know, picked up on Graham Greene and, you know, Agatha Christie and, you know, every kind of mystery, but then a lot of literature and comic writing as well. So that happened. Then let's just skip forward. I decided to be a journalist. And went to college, got a degree in journalism, did that for 20 years. And as life progressed, I found that I was really most interested. I was an editor for the most part over a bunch of writers. And I was most interested in true crime, and not just true crime, but what happened to victims afterward, 10 years afterward, 20 years afterward. So I spent a lot of time editing stories for newspapers that were like fiction, only they were actually real life. At one point, I kept talking about how I wanted to write a thriller. And my husband just said, if you don't do it now, you will never do it. And so I quit a successful job and just jumped into the fray. What else can you do? You have to take the big risk, right? So for 3 years, I wrote 2 books. All of them were rejected by major publishers. I was sure that this is not what I was supposed to do with my life, but my husband, extremely supportive, didn't ask me why I hadn't washed clothes when, you know, there weren't words that he was hearing that were coming out of the computer. So then one lucky day, one of the editors who had rejected both my books changed her mind at Random House. She was the editor of Lee Child. And she said, you know what, I'm going to take you on. And that started my entire career, that lucky little break. And I will say that probably 2 weeks before, I was thinking about going back and getting a journalism job. So you just never know when things will turn around. And since then, I've been able to make a living at writing novels. And so that's been about 10 to 12 years, depending on how you count it. So I'm very lucky.
You are. And that's an amazing, well, but luck does play a part, but talent and persistence also gets factored in there. And I can relate to so much of your story. I didn't realize we had so much in common because my listeners have heard it a million times, but I quit a 22-year corporate career in order to do what I do now, which is edit and coach and write and all that stuff. So it is a leap of faith, but it turned out for the good, didn't it? That's great. I love that story. That's so great. Okay. Well, as you know, I'm an uber fan of your writing, especially the super compelling that you wrote for Black Eyed Susans. It's been my top favorite reads, like ever since I first read it a few years ago, but that wasn't your first thriller. So would you mind to tell me how your book Playing Dead, I think was your first thriller, came to be? I'm curious to know how you talked a little bit about how journalism and that. Tell us a little more about how you got into becoming specifically a crime fiction writer.
Okay, I will do that. First, I'm going to tell you that Black Eyed Susans was dropped by Random House.
I
thought I was going to have to start all over again. They eventually picked it up, and that turned out to be my most successful book. But that is, again, another story about persist, you know? Yes, it's just believe in yourself. So dopey.
Oh, I'm so glad you threw that in there. That's good.
But Playing Dead, actually, this was an idea in my head for a long time because a woman had written a letter to me asking me if I were her daughter who had been kidnapped years before. I got an actual letter like this. And she was from the same state. My parents were from Kentucky. And we're just, you know, look, we're twins. But just, you know, for a few seconds, I wondered, what if my whole life was a lie? This is, you know, it's crazy. But then I realized I have a hereditary condition that is extremely rare that comes through my mother's side. I mean, I knew it was not true. And my mother was deeply, deeply offended by this woman who wrote this letter. But her daughter had has still not been found. So it's very sad, difficult thing to know how to react to her, because she was obviously looking for, you know, something, an emotional connection to someone, even if it wasn't her daughter. So, but I thought also, what a good way to springboard a book with this idea. So I did that, and then it takes off on a lot of wild fictional turns. So that was the beginning of Playing Dead, which is my most Texas book. And I want to say it's my lightest book. I think my books have gotten a little darker as time has passed.
That is not a story I was expecting. That is a great story. I love that. I can't believe that actually happened. And I'm in Kentucky. I'm born and raised. My whole family's from Kentucky. Didn't know we had that in common too.
So good. I'm going to inherit a hill in Kentucky. I can't wait. It's all virgin forest.
Oh, but we'll have to chat about that. So we'll have to hear about it later. All right. Well, when I work with my coaching clients and writing clients, one of the early phases of the method that I teach involves exactly this research, which you and I talked a little bit about before we started the show, and it never fails. At least one person will ask me why we need to research when we're writing fiction, right? So assuming that some of my listeners have that same thought, can you tell them why you find it important to not only research before you write crime fiction, but to take it a step further and experience whatever it is that you're writing about? How's that help?
I think I always like to have a layer on my book beyond the plot. You know, dementia, the Texas death penalty, using prosthetics, whatever it is. And I don't want to portray that in a way as anything but realistic, because I feel like even more sometimes than nonfiction, entertainment has the ability to kind of educate people and teach them about things they don't know about, and they're barely realizing they're absorbing it. But primarily, it's because as a journalist, I want every bit of it to be as accurate as possible. I don't think there should be disinformation, any more of that tossed into the world. And I do remember listening to a very famous bestseller telling writers at a conference, don't research, it's a waste of time. If you're writing, you're wasting your time. And I've never read another book of his again. That's how important it is.
I've heard the same story, so I know who it is.
But we won't name names.
No. We'll support our fellow writers, even when we disagree wholeheartedly.
I always find out that what I assumed was wrong. And We Are All the Same in the Dark, my latest book, there's a young woman with a prosthetic eye. And, you know, I thought, well, it'll be round and it'll be glass and all these like stereotypes that you imagine. Instead, it, you know, is like a contact lens. It's made of acrylic. It's hand painted by an artist. People can wear them. And some of them are so beautiful, no one knows they have them on and they keep it a secret. So, you know, there were just a lot of moving moments as I interviewed young girls with an ocular prosthesis, and also the man who makes them, who was going to go into the army, and there was a ROTC accident. He lost one eye. He planned to be a career officer, and instead now this is what he does, which he said was providential because he changes so many more lives. You know, there are Saudi Arabian princesses who come to him, and athletes who don't want people to know they have one eye because on a basketball court, they might guard them differently, or, you know, whatever. There's just a million stories.
Oh, you are chock full of stories, Missy. I love it. So we're going to take a break. And then I have some interesting questions about some things you told me about how you've done research. So just a moment. We'll be back after we take a quick break.
Sounds good.
Are you still on the fence about whether to hire an author coach? Are you still not quite convinced it's really worth the investment or the time that you'd have to put in working with an author coach? I totally get it. Honestly, had you told me even 10 or so years ago that hiring an author coach would truly up my writing game and increase my chances of success, I'd have laughed. Actually, no, I'd have said, "What's an author coach?" And then I'd have laughed. But here's the reality, folks. There's a reason that author coaching, while a relatively new subset of the coaching industry, is quickly gaining popularity among authors and anyone who wants to write a great book. I found a study recently that blew even my mind. It showed that beyond any doubt, authors who invest in professional help with their books, meaning editors, cover designers, coaches, all those things, actually start their writing career off making, get this, 100x the book sales of one who tries going it alone. I kid you not. In 2019, a study done by Statistica, I believe, showed that authors who simply wrote their books, listed them on Amazon, and then tried to sell with no professional help, earned an average first-year income of $500. That's it, $500 over 12 months. However, authors who did invest in coaches and or editors, etc., wound up with the first year income of, get this, no kidding, closer to $50,000. That's the first year. That means that just by investing in help from a seasoned veteran, expert, or coach for what may be a couple thousand dollars, and that doesn't even include payments, wound up not only making every penny back, but then 10 times their investment in less than 12 months. Why is this? Well, writing is not unlike any other art form. While yes, some people may be more naturally gifted when it comes to storytelling or even the technical aspect of writing, you know, grammar, spelling, etc., the process of writing a great book that will be successful and actually sell well is something that requires more than just God-given talent. You need someone who has been through the process more than once and come out much better for it all, and for all their hard work to show you the ropes, teach you all the ins and outs of publishing, and so much more. And guess what? You actually know one such person. That's right. It still amazes me when I get messages on social media, even emails asking, "Hey, do you ever help authors write their books?" Oh my God, of course I do. That's actually my first and foremost job. This podcast really is just a labor of love. It's something I do to give out extra free advice to aspiring authors or any even veteran authors who need help. It comes out of my own time and my own pocket. It is by no means my primary focus, though. Author coaching and book editing absolutely is. Anything that helps authors. And since I don't have enough time here to go over all the details of exactly how I can help you, here's what I'll do. I'll offer everyone listening a completely free consultation by phone or Zoom if you simply email me, and the email is info@writeyourbestbook.com, or if you're in a place where you can safely do this, visit the show notes, and toward the very bottom, there's a link that you can just go ahead and set up your own free consultation without even having to email us. It's that easy. I promise it will be worth your time. I don't just ask questions and give you information. I will actually make sure you walk away with at least one piece of actionable information you did not have before. And once again, it's totally free. So, what do you have to lose? Absolutely nothing. Now, let's get back to my discussion with Julia Heberlin.
Okay, we're back in the studio with Julia Heberlin, and we're going to continue our very fascinating conversation about writing realistic crime fiction and how Julia approaches her very amazing stories that she's written and how she does her research to make it realistic. So Julia, once again, our topic this week is writing and researching realistic crime fiction, which is a perfect topic for you to talk about. considering you've done some pretty amazing things, and we've already touched on a couple of them, in the name of writing realistic crime fiction. Please share with my listeners some of your most surreal things you've done while researching for one of your books.
I would say surreal and also emotional. I think
I couldn't think of the right. I was like, "What is the right word here?"
Well, there were some moments that were surreal, but researching almost every time has changed a piece of me and how I view the world. To kick it off, I interviewed a man named Anthony Graves, who was on death row in Texas for 20 years for a crime he didn't do. The actual killer had fingered him. So he was about to die. He was accused of burning to death 6 women and children in a house. And so hearing his story and how he was freed through this, you know, relentless death penalty attorney was extremely moving. And now he goes on to try to make sure this doesn't happen to anyone else. He has a charitable organization. And in researching the death penalty as well, and this was all for Black Eyed Susans, I decided to go stand outside the death house during an execution. And that was surreal because for a number of reasons. One, because it was so incredibly routine. There was barely anybody there. And everybody knew where to stand. The pros and the cons stood on opposite sides. The thing that I will never, ever forget is there were the man who was being executed had killed a cop in Houston. And so there were a row of cops on motorcycles. And as soon as they knew he was being executed, they were at the closest part of the building to him, and they just roared their motors just to, as he died. So that scene, I've almost duplicated entirely, in Black Eyed Susans, with obviously, you know, the fictional element. And, in that same book, I also, was very interested in how mitochondrial DNA is used to identify old and degraded bones. I'm very fascinated with old bones. And I met a very legendary forensic scientist. Her name is Rhonda Roby. She spent 8 years at 9/11 identifying people out of bits of bone. And by talking to her, I based a character on her. And I also found several plot twists in knowing the science of the DNA. So that was pretty critical. And, you know, this last book, We Are All the Same in the Dark, has, you know, the crime element. But what really moved me most were these interviews with these young women. One who had lost her eye when she was 9 at her grandmother's house, when there was a big family fireworks display going on at the lake. And she said she remembers the moment they got her to the hospital in Oklahoma City, and there was a mirror, and she saw the black hole that was her eye. And she saw a nurse in the background, the face of the nurse. And she said it looked like I was the most terrible thing she'd ever seen. And what she asked herself at 9 is, what am I now? What am I now? So, you know, I hope this kind of gives you just some idea of not just, you know, the factual information, but the emotional impact. I hope that it helps me give the novels I write.
Well, it does. And I'm sitting here thinking, not only are those amazing and just heart-wrenching stories, but that's, as I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, that's what you need to do, because you need to feel it in order to portray it for the reader to feel it. Because I've always said to my clients and everybody, like, you know, you don't need to just focus on having your readers like your book or even love your book. You need to make them feel something. And that right there would make me feel something. You know what I mean? If I read that story, it made me feel something with just hearing it. So that right there.
To know, she's a beautiful Instagram model, and no one knows.
Oh my goodness, that is amazing. Ah, wow. Well, let's keep going, because this is, I could go down that for a while. What are some other ways that an author can research their crime fiction before writing to make sure that they're, and as I just said, kind of make make them feel something, give them a visceral reader experience if they are not able to travel anywhere, especially during a pandemic. For example, we're stuck at home and can't travel now. Do you tend to do other things like watch videos online or read books, listen to podcasts? What other habits do you use when researching?
Well, I've definitely had to adapt. And my next book has an astrophysicist, a psychic, and a conspiracy theorist in it. So I have listened to a ton of conspiracy theory podcasts until my husband thinks I'm becoming a conspiracy theorist myself. But let me tell you, there's some true stuff going on there. I've read Neil deGrasse Tyson's Astrophysics for People in a Hurry. I've watched a lot of documentaries on how the universe was created, because astrology and the sky is going to, you know, play a role in this. And also, I am going to have a psychic reading by Zoom. So I kind of see how that works. So, and maybe change the course of my entire career, who knows?
Yeah.
but I think there are, I mean, you know, telephone conversation, Zoom, you can still get it done.
Yeah, I agree. And one of, just a side note, you know, I did that when I first wrote my first book that got published, not my first book ever, but my first book that did well, was I did exactly that. I was writing about a paralegal, which I knew, but she becomes an investigator, which I did not know. And so I found an investigator that I knew through my line of work, and having those connections, and I didn't ever have to go see him by phone, by email. You can still touch base with those experts or people who have those stories to tell without having to go anywhere. So that's a really, really good point. Well, one more question. So I'm 43 and I only recently changed from a physical planner to calendar and calendar to a digital version. So I'm obviously old school when it comes to storing my research. But how about you? I'm interested in learning how you organize and keep track of all these amazing, wonderful stories and things that you learn in your research, and what systems you use or have in place so you can refer back to them.
Oh, you think I have a system? That's really funny.
First misassumption, right?
I am very much a post-it note person. So when I'm writing, post-it notes are everywhere. After I've done an interview, I do all the interview in longhand, and then I also record it. I go back and transcribe as soon as I possibly can, because I can't really read my serial killer handwriting. Have those notes someplace, try to pick out the pieces that I know that I want to write about and have them in a file. I listen a lot to how people talk phrases that I think are funny or interesting. Maybe you do this as well. I will keep them on my phone. As soon as somebody says something that I like, I hear a fact that I think is interesting, but maybe doesn't even apply to the book, but I'm going to sneak it in there anyway. I write it down. I keep it in, you know, notes in my phone. So it's really very disorganized, I would say. So, but it starts with really, I think, knowing the subject. Like, I might research something for hours and have pages of notes and only use three paragraphs of it, mm-hmm. so I can speak of it with authenticity. I don't consider all that wasted work.
Use it again for something in the future. You just don't know. So you never know. Well, that's just, this has been just a very fascinating and entertaining conversation. My favorite this whole year. But before we go, do you have anything that maybe we did not touch on that you want to share with my listeners when it comes to researching or writing realistic crime fiction?
I would say, don't be afraid to pick up the phone, find the most prominent expert in a field, ask for a tour of something socially distanced if it's going to appear in your book. Don't be afraid to do that, because even before I was published, I have never been turned down. The experts want you to get it right. They're fascinated with their subject matter. So that, I think, stops a lot of people. So I would just urge them not to be afraid.
Love it. Perfect note to end on. But before we go, tell us where, if you want us to, where we can follow you on social media, sign up for newsletters, and also where we can get a copy of what, either your latest book or your next book that's coming out, whatever you have you want us to know about, or all of them.
Let's see. I have a website, juliaheberlin.com. And I usually post the most personal stuff on Instagram. I would say that's my, I do have a Twitter and a Facebook, but I use them more to, you know, boost events or things like that. But the personal side of me is on Instagram. My latest book, We Are All the Same in the Dark, will be out in paperback, I think, in July. So that might be a good time to get it. You can get it anywhere. You can get it independent bookstores. You can get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, wherever, available everywhere. So
we'll do that. And we'll link to your website at least, at the very least, in the show notes. So you guys, if you are in a place where you can look safely at your show notes, or you can do it later, go ahead and check out Julia's website. And I'm sure that, I know because I was on there yesterday, it links to basically every place you can buy every one of her books. So you want to check that out. All right. Thank you so much, Julia, for joining.
All right. You're a great interviewer. Thank you so much.
Thank you. You're a great interviewee. So it's been wonderful. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. That was by far, I think I've said this before, but I mean it this time. That was by far one of my probably top three all-time favorite podcast episodes ever. And I'm talking out of 62 episodes. And wasn't it just, it was not just because of my fangirl crush on Julia either. How interesting and helpful was that discussion? I can guarantee you all got at least one new idea about how you can research your next book just by listening to this discussion. And if you'd never really thought about researching your novels before you write, before this, hopefully now you'll start doing that every time you have a story idea and before you start writing. I began doing really intensive research probably with about my fourth novel, and it did make a huge difference. What I wouldn't give to go back and tell my newbie author self everything I've learned in the past 14 or so years, oh my goodness, what wouldn't I give? And doing research on my novels before I begin writing is absolutely one of those important lessons. Please be sure to check out Julia's book, specifically Black Eyed Susan's, as it's amazing, but so are all her other great crime novels and her other books. So check them out. You can get them in bookstores everywhere and online on Amazon and many other places. And you can find those by going to her website, which she listed earlier, but we'll also put in the show notes. And now you know when you read them, the links that Julia went to just to bring you stories that are so rich and vivid, you'll actually feel like you're right smack in the middle of your stories. And be sure to reach out and follow her on social media. Don't forget, the podcast is only a small portion of what we offer at Write Your Best Book. Aside from author coaching I mentioned during the break, we also have a staff of fully trained, super experienced, and highly skilled editors, which means we almost never have a wait period to start your project. And we're able to offer better rates than almost all of our competitors. And that's not even mentioning the payment plans that we offer. Yeah, it's really simple. You make one-time purchase and you make payment plans set up to your convenience. We also have an online writing course that's available on our website. And finally, Modern Boss Boutique, where you can now stock up on all the essentials you need to create the perfect writing nook. That's all the time I have for this week, folks. Be sure that you've hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any more exciting and helpful episodes this season. Talk soon, and in the meantime, go write your best book. This is what you've been waiting for.